no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
And now, stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who's guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In the Signal Oil program, The Whistler.
S-I-T-N-A-L.
Signal.
Signal gasoline.
Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler. For extra driving pleasure, the signal to look for is the yellow and black circle sign that identifies Signal service stations from Canada to Mexico. And for Sunday evening listening pleasure, the signal to listen for is this whistle that identifies the Signal Oil program, The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things. For I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now the Whistler's strange story, Ticket to Murder.
Standing at the window of the cheap hotel room and looking out over the outline of lights and neon that was Kansas City after sundown, Eve Benton felt a dread, pressing sense of loneliness, concern. That the condition would pass, she was certain. She'd managed before, she would manage again, some way. But she wasn't thinking of that now. Eve Benton was being sorry for herself, forgetting her good points. The quiet, restless beauty in her face, the sullen attractiveness of her features. She was annoyed at the city and the world. She raised the window as though voicing of her resentment, and she heard other words nearby. They came from the next room.
You're saying $30,000. That's the deal.
A lot of money. A lot of money.
Not for the return of the Perriman necklace.
$30,000. And no questions asked? Is that what the insurance company says?
Yeah, that's what they say. You really got the Perriman necklace? That I gotta see.
Does this look like it?
Yes, it does.
You smile strangely, don't you, Eve? Listening in ironic amusement. 30,000, one of the men next door said. They're talking in thousands while you stand so close by, wondering where you'll get the money to pay your hotel bill. You start to close the window when the voices suddenly grow louder and raise in anger.
You can't get away with this.
I'll worry about that. You just worry about this.
You freeze to the spot, don't you, Eve? Your outstretched hand touching the windowsill remains fixed, rigid like a statue, and then you hear someone climbing out onto the fire escape. A man is outlined by the staccato flashing of a neon sign on top of the building next door. He hesitates, glances back at the room he just left. You get a clear look at his face, and then he starts down the fire escape steps. You lean out, see the man drop to the ground and disappear into the shadows of the alley below. You wait, staring, then run out of your room into the hall. The door to the room next door is partially ajar. You run to it and glance inside. A man. On the floor, lying very still. He's dead, isn't he, Eve? You're about to turn and run when your eyes fasten on the telephone.
Hello? Hello? Desk?
Hello? Yes, what is it? Hello? Hello? Answer, please. Hello?
You lower the phone, staring, unable to speak because of something you see. Something near the dead man's hand. A wallet, isn't it, Eve? Yes, with part of the contents spilled out. A few bills, and among them a train ticket. Something that you could use.
Are we still connected?
Yes. Yes, Eve. A train ticket for the West Coast, San Francisco, and almost $65 in currency. It's an answer to your problem, isn't it? You lose little time in packing, leaving your room by the same method as the man who fled only a few moments before. The fire escape. Later, as you settle safely back in the seat, the train begins to roll. You casually present the stolen ticket to the conductor. You've succeeded, haven't you, Eve? No questions asked. The train gathers speed, hurrying you away from Kansas City. You relax now, become aware of your surroundings, the other passengers. Notice the man opposite you, his face half obscured by a newspaper. And then...
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I startle you?
No. No, it's just that you look like someone I knew.
Well, now I've got another reason to be sorry, that I'm not. You just get on the train?
Kansas City, yes.
Oh, it's an interesting place.
Yes. Yes, it is.
He smiles, doesn't he, Eve? He can even do that. This man who pretends to be so nonchalant, so much at ease. You wonder how he would feel if he knew that you had recognized him. That you were certain he was the man you saw fleeing from the hotel room next to yours. That you shared his grim secret of murder.
Something wrong?
What?
Well, the way you're staring at me. You said I'm not the guy you thought I was. Is there some other reason?
No, there isn't anything.
You want to read the paper?
No, thank you.
Oh, good. I'd rather talk anyway.
Talk?
Yes. We've some distance to travel together. There's no reason why we shouldn't become better acquainted. Is there?
No. No, there isn't. No reason at all.
Tonight's $20 Signal gasoline book goes to Mrs. W.G. Reed of Long Beach, California, for sending in this limerick. My car seemed to need overhauling. The gas it consumed was appalling. Then Signal I tried, and now when I ride, I can pay for my gas without bawling.
Signal, Signal, Signal gasoline. Your car will go far, will go for the gasoline.
Our congratulations to Mrs. Reed for her very human way of describing the good mileage you enjoy with Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline. Too bad there wasn't room in her limerick to get poetic about all the benefits you notice when you switch to Signal. I mean Signal's snappy starting, Signal's peppy pickup, Signal's smooth, silent power. For it's a fact, mileage and performance go hand in hand. If you'd like to enjoy both, then the next time your gas tank gets thirsty, treat your car to the gasoline that's packed with go. Fill up with Signal and go farther.
You're unable to avoid the young man sitting across from you, aren't you, Eve? A man who's introduced himself as Frank Gilby. A man you're certain committed a murder in the hotel room next to yours in Kansas City. Later, he escorts you to the club car of the train, orders cocktails, and the two of you talk like old friends as the train roars through the night heading west. You're careful to avoid mentioning the hotel, aren't you? Leave it to him to take the lead in the conversation. All you want to do is get the trip over with and leave the train. But by the time you reach Oakland and board the ferry boat that will take you to San Francisco, the young man has become quite persistent.
Miss Benton. Benton.
Yes? Oh.
You know, I think you've been trying to avoid me, Miss Benton. Eve? Any reason?
Why, no, Mr. Gilby, I've told you.
I was beginning to think I should take those magazine ads to heart.
Oh, no, it's just that I've had things on my mind. I've been thinking about a job.
Well, perhaps I can help you. I know a lot of people.
No, I have something waiting for me in the city.
Well, just a thought. In case it doesn't work out, I wish you'd give me your address.
I'm not sure what it will be.
Well, mine is 4950 California Street. I've got a flat there.
I don't believe I asked.
No, you didn't. I'm forcing myself on you, Miss Benton.
You try too hard.
But do I? Well, don't blame me. I'd really like to see you again.
Perhaps you will.
Like I said, maybe if that job doesn't work out...
Yes, I know. 4950 California Street.
You want only to rid yourself of the persistent Mr. Gilby, don't you, Eve? Finally, once ashore and in a taxi cab, you feel he's no longer a worry. You register at a small hotel on Geary Street, dismiss him from your thoughts. But late the following morning, as you're having breakfast in a small diner, you're listening to the radio, and something the news announcer says sets you to thinking about
and
Frank
in
again.
In local news, the Perryman jewelry case has reached a stalemate, with the valuables still unreturned. According to insurance investigator Leonard Quinn, a contact with an underworld character in Kansas City failed to take place. It has since been revealed that the insurance company has made a tentative offer of $30,000 with, as we understand, no questions asked for the return of the necklace to their representative, Mr. Quinn, or to the home of wealthy Mrs. Evans Perryman in Hillsborough. However...
Well, I wanted to hear that.
Huh? Oh, sorry, lady. The guy was just about through, though.
Well, what was that name he mentioned? Mrs. Evans somebody?
Perryman. Mrs. Evans Perryman. Lives down the peninsula.
Perryman. I see.
You acquainted with the lady?
No. But I've heard of the name.
Yes. The words of the newscaster set you to thinking, didn't they, Eve? Particularly the mention of $30,000. That was the figure you heard Frank Gilby mention in that Kansas City hotel room. And you remember the name Perryman, too. Strangely enough, after you've taken a cab to 4950 California Street, walked up the stairs to Frank Gilby's flat, as you're about to knock on the door, you hear the words again.
Poor Quinn. Yeah. That $30,000 on the Perryman deal. You get me the money and you'll get the necklace back. Yes, that's right. Take a couple of days. The contact is out of town. Sure. All right, bye. Yeah. Oh, Eve, hello.
Hello, Frank.
Changed your mind, huh? Thought you'd look me up after all.
Uh-huh.
How'd the job go? You all set?
No, I didn't go there.
Well, maybe I can help on that, like I said.
I'm sure you can.
Well, come in.
Like I said, I'm sure you can help me, Frank.
Well, anything at all.
I'm glad you feel that way. Because I'm referring to the Perryman deal, the $30,000 you're going to get from Leonard Quinn and the insurance company.
What?
Mm-hmm. The $30,000 you wanted all for yourself. That's why you... killed your partner back there in that Kansas City hotel, took the necklace I happened to be in the next room.
I see.
So you've got a new partner now, Frankie.
Oh, have I?
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't try anything if I were you. I've taken the necessary precautions. If something happens to me...
The cops find out about that little accident in Kansas City and they come looking for me, right?
Right.
Well. Looks like I'm right behind the eight ball.
You don't have to stay there. If you play it right.
That means your way.
My way.
Okay.
Have you talked with Quinn?
No.
Oh, now, Frankie. I think you have.
Okay, so I talked with him. He thinks I'm just a go-between.
Naturally, you wouldn't tell you'd killed a man to get the necklace. What sort of an arrangement have you made with him?
He gives me the dough, and in a couple of days, after I contact the guy with the necklace, I bring it back to him. That's all.
Quinn trusts you that much?
Oh, sure. I've handled deals like this before for Mr. Quinn.
When is he going to pay off?
Tonight.
Oh, fine. Well, it's all settled, then. I'll meet you here after you've collected from Quinn. What time?
I'll be back by 9.
We'll open a bottle of champagne to celebrate.
I'll buy.
Naturally, it's your party. I'll see you tonight, Frankie. At 9.
It was simple, wasn't it, Eve? Easier than you thought. And now you're in partnership with a murderer. A temporary partnership, you tell yourself, and it'll be worth it. $15,000. After it's over, you'll move on, start a new life. Yes, it was all so simple, talking your way into that partnership. But as the day wears on, you begin to wonder about it. Perhaps it was too simple, Eve. You really hadn't expected Frank to accept your demand so readily. The more you think about it, the more certain you become that he'll bear watching. Early that evening, you hurry back to his flat. And as your cab turns into California Street, you see Frank board a cable car.
Driver.
Yes, ma'am?
Don't stop. I've changed my mind. I want you to stay close to that streetcar.
Sure, sure.
But not too close.
Okay, I get it.
At Montgomery Street, you watch Frank step into an office building. And sitting in the cab, you wait, keeping your eyes on the entrance. A quarter of an hour goes by, and then he comes out, walks back to the corner, hops onto a cable car as it starts the climb up the hill.
Driver?
Yeah, I know. The cable car. It ain't none of my business, lady.
You're quite right, driver. It's none of your business.
You follow Frank back to his flat. See him hurry inside. You're quite certain you know what he's up to, aren't you, Eve? But you want more time to think about it alone. So you tell your cab driver to keep going. Finally, you return to Frank's place.
Well, hello. Sort of early, aren't you?
I've changed my mind, Frank. I'd like to go with you when you get the money.
Oh. Well, it's been called off.
Called off?
Well, postponed is what I mean, until tomorrow night. I just got a phone call from Quinn. Said he hadn't had time to get the money from his boss yet.
Oh, I see.
Sit down, sweetheart.
I was looking forward to that champagne.
Well, no reason why we can't celebrate in advance. I was hoping you'd call me.
Were you?
Yeah, I thought we might have dinner together. North Beach, Fisherman's Wharf, maybe?
Sounds interesting.
What do you say?
Well, I've always wanted to see the top of the Mark.
Fine. We'll start there.
All right.
There's a nice little restaurant on Broadway I think you'll like. Best veal scallopini in town.
I'm sure I'll love it, whatever it is. Oh, Frank.
Yeah.
My gloves. I must have left them on the chair.
Oh, sure. I'll get them.
The moment he turns around, steps back into the room, you snap the automatic lock on his door so that it's unlocked. Now you won't need a key, will you, Eve? Then quickly you reach down and tear a hole in your stocking. In a moment, Frank returns.
Here we are.
Oh, thanks.
All set?
All set. Oh, dear.
What's the matter?
Well, just look at that. A run in my stocking. Look at it.
Yeah, that's quite a run. Nicest one I've seen in a long time.
Well, you won't mind stopping by my hotel for a minute, will you? It's only a block out of our way.
Oh, of course not. Let's go.
At your hotel, you leave Frank waiting in the cab parked at the entrance, while you hurry inside the crowded lobby and ride on out through the door on the other side. You go back to Frank's place a block away, slip quietly into the apartment, find what you'd expected. An envelope containing $30,000 in his suitcase. You put the envelope in your purse. Well, Frank was going to double-cross you after all, wasn't he, Eve? Yes, you've proof of that now. You hurry back to your hotel and go quickly to your room. The whole thing has taken you less than 5 minutes. And now you put in a phone call to the railroad station. Check the trains leaving town and make your reservations. As you hang up the receiver...
Yes? Yes,
I got to wondering about you, sweetheart.
Oh, Frank. Well, I'm sorry I took so long, but I had a long-distance phone call from my brother.
What, news from home?
Yes, and not too good, I'm afraid. My father's had another attack. I'm terribly worried.
Well, that's too bad.
Frank, about tonight. I don't feel much like celebrating, you understand.
No, sure.
I wouldn't be very good company.
Oh, don't give it another thought, baby. We'll have dinner tomorrow night.
All right. I'm really sorry.
Oh, sure, sure. I'll see you tomorrow.
You watch from your hotel window and see Frank get into the cab and drive away. Quickly, you pack your things, check out of the hotel. It's 2 hours before your train leaves. Time to have dinner. But first, there's one thing you must do. You've made up your mind about that, haven't you, Eve? From the moment you found the $30,000 in Frank's flat, you step into a phone booth and call the police department.
That man?
A murder, Sergeant, at the Alden Hotel in Kansas City 5 days ago. The killer is here in town.
What?
Arranged a deal with Leonard Quinn, the insurance investigator.
Anything to do with the Perryman necklace robbery?
Everything. The party I'm talking about took the Perryman necklace from the man who was killed in Kansas City.
Go ahead.
Well, I suggest you contact Mr. Quinn. Get him to tell you who he'd made that deal with, and you'll have the killer.
You'll give me your name, ma'am?
No, I won't. Goodbye.
Now you're settled comfortably on the train as it moves out of the station, rumbles through the outskirts of San Francisco. You lean back, close your eyes. It's been a trying day, hasn't it, Eve? And you're tired. As you listen to the rhythmic click of the wheels, you doze off. And then suddenly you're awake again. You're staring at the newspaper headlines in the hands of the man sitting opposite. Perryman necklace mystery near solution. Local police link obscure Kansas City murder victim with theft. A cold wave of fear sweeps over you. Then he lowers the paper.
Hello, sweetheart.
Frank.
You surprised? The switchboard operator at your hotel couldn't resist a 10-spot.
I see. How stupid of me.
Wasn't very smart of you to walk out with my 30 grand, either.
Isn't that what you were going to do?
You got me all wrong, honey. I was going to surprise you.
I'll bet.
Okay. So each of us tried to double-cross the other one. What do you say we call it even, split the money between us?
All right, Frank.
We ought to try to get along, sweetheart. You have something on me, and I can make trouble for you if I want to.
Can you?
You're in this as much as I am now. I can always say that you helped me do that job in Kansas City. Our coincidental appearances would make it pretty hard for you to deny.
Yes, I guess it would.
So let's bury the hatchet, hmm?
Why not?
And after we get back to San Francisco, we can do the town together, baby. Have a lot of laughs. You know, I got a hunch this partnership's going to turn out okay.
I was just thinking the same thing. We'll just forget the past. Think only of the future.
Right. A bright future, sweetheart. The two of us.
Here's good news for you motorists who will be needing a new battery this winter. Did you know there's now a new, finer battery guaranteed to last up to 2.5 times as long as ordinary batteries? It's the new Signal Deluxe battery, guaranteed for a full 2.5 years on a service basis. This amazingly long life is due to microporous all-rubber separators, which have been called the greatest improvement in batteries in 20 years. But longer life is only part of the story. Because these improved type separators hold twice as much acid solution between the plates, Signal Deluxe batteries deliver up to 35% more power. Yet this superior performance actually costs you less per month, which is really the only logical way to figure battery costs. What's more, right now, Signal dealers are giving generous trade-in allowances for old batteries, plus liberal credit terms. No wonder drivers with an eye to economy, as well as those who demand top quality, are both heading for Signal service stations. They know that today's best battery buy is a quicker starting extra long life Signal Deluxe battery.
It was a shock, wasn't it, Eve, to find Frank Gilby on the train after you thought you'd slipped away from him in San Francisco. You were certain you'd seen the last of him, and you'd have the $30,000 all to yourself. But then there he was, demanding his share. $30,000, Eve. A lot of money. And you made up your mind that Frank wasn't going to get any part of it regardless. In the morning, when the train pulls into Los Angeles, the $30,000 is still tucked away safely in your suitcase. And you're confident Frank Gilby will never bother you again. He'll never be able to involve you in the murder he committed in Kansas City. Yes, you're quite confident. Sure, aren't you, Eve? Even as the police board the train, step into your car, talk quietly to the other passengers. And then you find the lieutenant talking
to you. That's
right.
That's right, Miss...
Benton.
Miss Benton. He was sitting here opposite you, according to the conductor.
Well, you say he fell off the train, Lieutenant? Oh, how horrible. Oh, he seemed like such a nice young man, too.
You didn't know him?
Well, no, I'd never seen him before. We talked a little, of course, just train conversation, you know.
Hmm? Oh, it's you. Didn't waste any time getting down here, did you?
Well, we got to keep our readers up on what's happening in our little old world, you know. Come on, Lieutenant. I want this to hit the next edition. Watch what this guy fell off the train. Where did it happen?
Just out of San Luis Obispo. And he didn't fall. He was pushed.
Uh-huh.
Pushed? What makes you think that, Lieutenant?
Yeah. What's this all about?
The San Francisco police got a tip last night. Phone call from a dame about a payoff. An insurance investigator was making a deal for the Perriman necklace with a party she said killed a man in Kansas City.
Oh, another killing involved, huh?
Mm-hmm. The insurance man was going to hand over $30,000 for the Perriman necklace.
See. Then you think the payoff was to be made here on the train?
Yeah. Quinn completed the deal all right, because when his body was found, the necklace was in his pocket.
Quinn?
That's right. The man who was pushed off the train. Leonard Quinn.
Well, he told me he was Frank Gilby.
Well, he probably wanted to keep his identity covered until he'd completed the deal.
I see.
If our tip is right, the killer pushed Quinn off the train so that there wouldn't be any witness.
Now, wait a minute. You think the killer who pushed Quinn off the train was the Kansas City killer, too?
Well, that's what the woman who tipped us off told us. Now, all we have to do is examine all the luggage in these cars and search the passengers.
Ah, I get it. And if you find the $30,000, you'll have...
We'll have our killer.
Ah.
Well, Miss Benton, I'm sorry to bother you. But as long as we're here, we might as well start with you.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine quality automotive accessories. Remember, if you would like the fun of having your friends hear a limerick of yours on The Whistler, the address to which to send it is the Signal Oil Company, Los Angeles, 55, California. All limericks become the property of the Signal Oil Company. Those selected for use on The Whistler will be chosen by our advertising representatives on the basis of humor, suitability, and originality. So, of course, they must be your own composition. Featured in tonight's story were Joan Banks and Frank Lovejoy. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Joel Malone and Adrian John Doe, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is entirely fictional. All characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember, at this same time next Sunday, another strange tale by The Whistler.
S-I-G-N-A-L.
Signal gasoline.
When you give to the community chest, you're helping not just one organization, but many worthy causes that directly benefit 4 out of every 10 families. Think of that when you're deciding how much to give to the community chest. Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
In the plains country of Wyoming Territory, I met a homesteading family. This is an account of how they lived and nearly died. Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman. I came across the shack in the mid-afternoon. It seemed to spring out of a slight depression in the unchanging flatness of plains, this isolated cabin with its miniature corral. And startling against the sun-browned earth, the tiny patch of green lawn. As I drew closer, I saw a child, perhaps 3 years old. She hugged a shapeless lump of calico in her arms and stood quiet in the doorway, watching gravely as I approached. I called hello to her. Her eyes remained on me, wide, gray-blue. The only reaction to my voice, a tightening of her hands about the faceless doll. I saw the window, a flap of canvas serving for glass, rough-hewn logs, ill-fitting, the chinks filled with baked earth. At the side of the cabin, a few yards away, was a well with its rope and an iron bucket. I looked back to the child, but she was no longer there. Instead, a tall, flaxen-haired woman stood in the doorway, a Winchester held in her hands.
Jingle your spurs, mister. Go on.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to frighten you. I wondered if I could have some water. For the horses, well, I'd be willing to pay.
You alone?
Yes.
We're not used to strangers riding this way. Where are you headed?
Laramie.
Well, that's a long ride.
I know.
Your horse looks tired. You better water him.
Oh, thank you.
I got nothing for the horse to drink out of. You'll have to use your hat.
All right.
Here. Maybe you can use this. It's not much, but it's the biggest pan I've got.
No, really, the horse doesn't mind my hat. He's used to it.
Never mind. Poor.
Oh, thank you. Oh, it's been a hot day.
It's about the same as usual. I'm sorry about the rifle, mister.
Sure, it's all right.
No, I'm sorry. My husband's away. Won't be back till late. It's just the baby and me.
I understand.
I guess it's easy to forget hospitality out here. I'm sorry that water's some brackish. Wally's digging a new well around the back, but it hasn't hit sweet water yet.
I'm very grateful. Would you take this, please?
Oh, no. We don't take money for water.
Yeah, I wondered about your grass over there.
It's pretty, isn't it? My sister sent the seeds from home, from the east, Connecticut.
Oh?
That's where I'm from, before Wally and I got married and came out here. Do you know Connecticut, mister?
Yes, I've been there.
You have? Where, Richfield? Do you know Richfield?
No. New Haven, though. I've been there.
Oh, that's fine. Just fine. Oh, imagine. New Haven. You must be one of those Yale college men.
No.
The way you talk.
No, I'm English.
I could have sworn it was New England. Boston, maybe.
How long have you been out here?
A year now. We lived in St. Louis before that. The baby was born there and... Listen to me chattering on. I guess it's just that we don't get much chance to talk to folks from the east.
I can understand.
Can you? Can you? Well, I declare, we haven't even been introduced. I'm Meg Calder.
J.B. Kendall.
Mr. Kendall, why don't you come on in and have some apple cornbread? I just made some this morning.
Oh, well, it's kind of you.
Pure selfish, that's what it is. I want to hear about New Haven and the like. You best put your horse in the corral. I'll make some coffee. Of course, it isn't like using fresh apples, real apples. But I guess we're lucky to even get dried ones out here.
Really? Good, Mrs. Coleman.
Will you have some more coffee?
Please.
Annie's taken quite a fancy to you. She usually hides when strangers are about.
And she takes after you. Her eyes, hair.
You think so?
Annie.
Ann Meredith, after my great aunt. Ann Meredith Honeycutt in Ridgefield.
Ah.
She's a little shy, Mr. Kendall. You see, she can't talk.
Oh, well, she'll be...
I mean, she never will. She was born with an affliction. But she can hear, and she understands some. She knows her name, and Mama, and Dada. Don't you, baby? Come on, sit on Mama's lap.
What brought you out here, Mrs. Calder?
The land. We're homesteading. Wally knows a lot about farming. He figures when we get enough water, we'll raise wheat and grain. Barley, maybe. Says we've got to raise it to feed cattle. There'll be money in there.
It must be hard work digging wells.
Well, it is. That one that's drying up, it's only 40 feet. The other one behind's down 50. Wally thinks maybe another 20 feet will get him water. He's gone to the Allen boys to borrow another spade.
You mean he's digging it alone?
Oh, yes. When we first set up here, a fella came riding by and he said he could locate water for us. And he surely did. Just used a forked stick and he pointed right to the spot. He was a preacher kind of man. Helped Wally dig and Wally paid him $5.
Must get rather lonely for you. I mean, when your husband goes away.
Mr. Kendall, I haven't seen a white woman for a year. I don't think there's one for 100 miles around. Mrs. Manning used to live north, 30 miles from here, but she and her family... Oh, but Ed Manning, they got killed by Indians just before we came here. Don't do that, baby. Of course, we haven't had any trouble with Indians, but I do say I sometimes worry being alone with the baby.
I should imagine.
I hope you don't mind.
Mind?
Me, talking on like a jaybird.
Oh, I don't mind at all, no.
Annie, where are you going? Annie? Oh, that child, I declare. It's Wally!
Kendall,
on his way to land. Didn't you get the trouble? No, no, it's trouble. Alan's place will
burn down that night.
Oh,
wow.
You
better get Annie in. I don't want her outside.
Come on, Annie. Come on.
Come on.
Kendall? Yes, you're Calder. Well, pleased to know you, but you better be moving on. There's likely to be trouble.
What is it? What happened?
A fella called Selfridge. Him and a bunch of cattlemen. They figured to run all the homesteaders out.
But why?
Well, they say we've been killing their range cattle.
That's not true.
I know it isn't. That's what Alan told them. He gave him and his brother a beating, then fired the place. Alan says they'll be heading this way.
Oh, Wally.
Mister, you better hit the trail.
Oh. If I can be of any help, I...
Well, there's not much we can do. There's a bunch of...
No, but I mean, if they come here, what's going to happen?
I don't know. I guess I'll send the wife and kid over to old man Hovland's place, and I'll wait here.
I'm not going. We've got a right to our land. It's all legal. You've got the papers, Wally. You can show them.
Meg, papers don't matter. They want to get us out of the territory. This thing's been coming for a long time. Alan told me, all over the country, cattlemen trying to chase homesteaders out.
They won't chase us.
You've got to go up to Hovland's and take the kid, Meg. There might be shooting.
You listen to me, Wally Calder. It took a year of wanting and all this spring for me to get that grass patch out front. I'm not giving it up. I'm here. Here I'm going to stay, and no cattleman nor anything else is putting me out.
Can't you get protection from the law?
Mister, the law is 130 miles from here, and they're not partial to homesteaders either.
Well, in that case, it might be just as well if I stay here, just in case you need another gun.
I'm obliged to you, Kendall, but if this Selfridge and his pals are looking for someone, it isn't going to be any healthier for you than for us.
I'll take the chance with you, at least overnight.
Not much of a place to bed down. Meg can fix you up with a blanket.
Well, sure I can. I've got a quilt, too. Not that you'll be needing it in this weather, Mr. Kendall.
I'd best see to feeding the horse. Meg, you break out that hunting piece. There's shelves back of the bureau top drawer.
All right, Wally.
I'll give you a hand, Mr. Calder.
Name's Wally. And I'd be much obliged. I haven't said anything to Meg, but I've been expecting something like this. Started up last winter, I guess.
What happened?
Oh, a lot of cattle died. It was a hard season. Well, you know how it is.
Yeah.
I came across a couple of poor critters myself, froze stiff, so I skinned them, took the hides. Wouldn't do the cattle any good. I sure needed them. So the cattlemen are saying fellas like me killed their beef, but they didn't die a natural death. Oh, watch out for the post.
All right, darling.
It's loose. Gotta fix that one of these days.
I think you're going to have visitors, Wally.
Hmm? Yeah, it must be them. Selfridge and his boys. How many can you see?
Three. No, four.
Yeah, four. Come on, we better get back to the cabin before they get here.
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. Here's a recipe to suit most anyone's taste. Tape a heaping portion of mystery, a full measure of suspense, fold in scientific detection and pulsating action, and heat to a burning climax. That's what we'll be serving up on CBS Radio's FBI in Peace and War every Sunday on most of these stations. And now we return you to the Anthony Ellis production of Frontier Gentlemen. Meg Calder was waiting for us in the doorway when we reached the cabin. I noticed an ancient hunting rifle, as well as the Winchester, leaning against the wall. The child, Anne, was huddled in a corner, still clasping the calico doll in her arms. We watched the riders as they approached across the plain, and their gallop slowed to a canter, a walk. And then they stopped a few feet from the little grass patch. One of the horses began to nibble at the green shoots.
Mister, get that horse of yours off my grass.
Now, Calder, I ain't gonna make a lot of talk. You got a kid inside. You got 1 hour to get her and your missus packed and out of here.
You got it all wrong. We're staying. You get off my land.
Homesteaders ain't wanted around here.
Alan's already told me about that. You think you're gonna burn down my place? You got another thing coming.
Now, me and the boys, we don't want no shooting.
You don't get that horse of yours off my grass. They're going to be shooting right now.
Meg, Meg, come back.
Back him up now. Go on. I'm not telling you again.
Put up your gun, man. We ain't got no quarrel with women.
No quarrel? What do you call it, then? Just trying to throw us off of what's rightly ours.
Yeah, man, she sure is a live dictionary, ain't she? Oh, come on, Jack. They ain't going peaceable. Let's get started.
I wouldn't.
Who are you?
A friend of the Calders.
Another sidebuster, huh? Well, you better make a nine in your tail part. We don't want your kind around here.
Now, I ain't got no personal quarrel with you, Calder, but this here country is for cattle. Fellas like you ain't gonna come in here killing our stock.
I never did.
Oh, come on, Selfridge. I won't stop around here all day wrangling with this home sucker. Let's start burning.
You take it easy, Flag. We're gonna give him an hour, like I said.
I have an idea it's going to be the longest hour you ever waited, my friend.
I ain't your friend, mister. I don't want no mavericker like you for a friend. 1 hour, Calder. Then we're coming back.
Yeah. 1 hour!
They don't seem to think you mean what you say.
That's the trouble. Nobody puts up a fight against them. Well, they'll learn something from me. My great-grandfather, Silas Honeycutt, stood off a whole regiment of redcoats with Putnam. No offense to you, Mr. Kendall. You being English and all.
No offense.
What do you think, Kendall? What are our chances?
Wally, Calder, you're not going
to... Now, wait a minute, Meg. We've got to think about the kid. Not going to be much use if she's got no ma and pa to care for her. Those fellas mean business. We put up a fight, they'll be killing, maybe on our side. I'm not afraid, but there are other places to start up again.
Wally, if you want to go, you go. I'm not stopping you. Me and Annie's staying. You do what you want.
She's some woman, you know, Kendall?
I know.
I asked, what do you think?
Well, I can't answer, Wally. It's up to you.
Yeah. She sure takes good care of that grass, doesn't she? You know, we figure on planting vegetables as soon as we get the new well dug.
Annie! Wally! Did you see the baby come out?
Well, no, she was inside.
Well, she's gone. I can't find her.
Annie? Honey? Annie?
Annie!
Did you look behind the stove? She liked to hide behind
it. I looked.
Well, perhaps she went out while we were all outside.
Maybe she got frightened. Annie! Annie, baby!
Kendall, you go around the other side. Will you look in the corral? She likes the horse. Maybe she's there.
the next 15 minutes, we searched. I could see Selfridge and his men about a quarter of a mile away, watching us. I found no trace of the child. When I returned, I saw the Calder standing beside the mouth of the new well behind the cabin. I joined them and felt a cold chill as I looked down into the darkness at my feet.
She couldn't have, honey.
Well, maybe she did. Maybe she's down there.
No, she knows about it. We showed her. We told her to stay away.
Maybe she didn't understand. Maybe she was running, scared and fell, and she's down there. And we can't hear her because she can't cry or shout or anything. And she's lying there, hurt and dead.
No, Meg. No, she's just hiding somewhere. We'll find her. No. But now, don't.
It's your fault. It's you making us come out here, this terrible place with dirt, not enough food.
Honey. We'll find her. She'll be all right. Now, take hold of yourself. Meg, they're back. It's so...
I don't care. I want my baby. Oh, you've got to find her.
Yeah. They noticed you ready to leave?
The child is lost. Did you see her come out of the cabin?
No. No, I didn't. Quint, you see her?
Nope.
Well, I guess maybe I did while we was talking.
Where'd she go?
Around yet at the back. Think she fell in the well?
Well, we don't know.
How deep is it?
About 50 feet.
Not that deep.
You called to her down there?
Well, it wouldn't do any good. She can hear, but she can't talk.
That's a longish fall. I wouldn't figure her to be alive.
Shut your fool mouth.
Well, that's true.
Calder, you sure she's down there?
No, but she isn't anyplace else.
Now, what's it like down there? Rock?
No. Mostly soft.
You know, she could be all right, little kid like that. They can take a fall pretty good, you know.
Now, that ain't much support, that soft dirt. Like as not, you'd get a cave in.
I'm aiming to fix that, but... Well, maybe she's not even in there. Yeah.
Get a rope, Wally. Somebody's got to go down to find out.
Yeah, not me, no, sir. I heard about black damp in them wells.
Oh,
no, sir.
Well, nobody's at my...
Hush up now. Well, I ain't going down there.
Haven't got a proper windlass. Just been tying the other end of the post there.
Good.
She holds good. Now, you fellas pay it out.
Sure.
I'm going down.
Right.
Wally.
Blossom.
You be careful.
Get behind me, Flag. Get behind him, Flag.
Hold tight,
Flag. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Slow. You got Flag?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Easy now, darling.
Easy. Slowly. There's a lot of loose dirt falling.
Stand clear to air.
Slowly. Wally, shout out when you're on the bottom.
Watch out. You got a hand caught in that head. Oh, yeah.
Stay all right now?
Yes. Go ahead.
Are you going?
He's down.
All right. He's
here. Wally? Is she all right? Wally?
I don't know.
Bring her up, Wally. Tie the rope under your arms. Hold her. We'll pull you up.
Yeah. All right.
Some slack. Wait. Let us know when you're ready.
Lord, please. Please. Oh, Lord. Deliver us, I pray.
Oh, now, Mrs.
Lord.
She's going to be all right. Now, you see, she's going to be just fine. You're taking a sweet time.
You ready? Wally, are you ready?
What's the matter with him? Calder, you want us to pull up?
Gone slack again.
It's a black dance, got him. That's what did you keel over?
Wally, can you hear me? I'm going down after them. Be ready to pull up fast when I give the word. I went down into the well as quickly as I dared, my feet unavoidably scuffing the walls of the shaft, sending showers of dirt to the bottom. As the circle of light diminished over my head, I became aware of a stale heaviness in the air, which became more pronounced with every foot of the descent. Then I was at the bottom, and I could dimly make out the form of the child. And huddled beside her, Wally. As I made a hurried loop of the rope under my arms, I began to feel lightheaded. It was an effort to pick up the child, to hold her.
Pick me up. Up!
Then, as the ascent began and the air became fresher, I felt my senses returning. And with them, the realization that the little girl's heart was still beating.
Is she all right?
Annie.
She's alive. She's alive. Take her.
All right. Now, you come on out. I'll go down for Calder.
No, no time. Send me down. Hurry. You'll have to bring us up together. I knew now what was meant by black damp. Some form of gas which gathered in the bottom of the well. This time, I breathed as sparingly as possible. At the bottom, I put Wally Calder over my shoulder and then began the never-ending journey to the surface. The light above me became dimmer and dimmer. I felt Wally falling, slipping off my shoulder, my grip on the rope weakening, weakening.
Mr. Kendall? Oh, there. That's better.
How did I...
They pulled it out, Kendall.
Huh? I don't remember.
They said you had a grip on me like to twist my neck off.
Oh, I'd like to thank them.
I already did. They didn't feel like waiting.
Oh?
No, they just kind of stood around a couple of minutes and figured they'd better get back to the ranch before night.
How's the little girl?
Some bruises. That's all.
Oh.
She's asleep now.
Meg and me, we just wish there was something we could do. If you want, you can share our place with us till you find a likely site for yourself. I'll help you build, Kendall. I'll give you a year's work for what you've done for us.
Oh, well, thank you. But I suppose I'm what you'd call a wandering man. I'll stay the night if I may. Then in the morning, I'll go on to Laramie.
And after Laramie?
I don't know, Mrs. Calder. I don't really know.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Vic Perrin, Larry Dobkin, Jack Crucian, and Harry Bartell. Dan Cubberly speaking.